Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome to The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times, back again for another podcast on a Monday for you. And I'm Will Kelleher, and today we've got Steve Jones has escaped the Datchet Studios, and we're in London Bridge, Steve.
No, Datchet is behind me now, is part of my past. And we are in London Bridge, and this is the second time we've been in London Bridge this morning, because the first time we were in London Bridge, Alfie had forgotten to put the microphone on.
Producer Alfie had a shocker already this morning. But it's a lovely view out the window, isn't it? I mean, listeners won't be able to see it clearly, but we can see the walkie-talkie and all sorts out the window.
All those buildings have got names, haven't they? There's the walkie-talkie and whatnot. You can't see the Shard because that's over the other side, but it's an absolutely amazing view.
Perfect. Well, did you have an amazing view when you were at Kingston Park on the weekend? That's a segue, isn't it?
There you go. That is a segue. I had an amazing view of an amazing occasion. I don't know if anyone is still to drop into to a women's game, Will, but it was packed at Newcastle, where everybody was sky high anyway because they'd beaten Gloucester the night before, and some of the Newcastle Falcons players looked a little bit worse for wear, if you ask me, but it was capacity crowd. But not only that, loud and supportive, adoring of Sarah Hunter, whose last game it was and who was given a royal sending off as befitting her royal status. But it was also a tremendous game, big win for England. They showed some superb play, but also Scotland, as I said yesterday, were by no means humiliated. They were tough, they competed till the end, and they looked a much better team. Now they're on the sort of early stages of professionalism than they have for ages. So it was just a great day, and train hell as normal, but it was a lovely occasion. And I, you know, anyone who's not seen the women's game, get over and see one.
How long did it take you to get home then?
About 14 and a half hours.
14 and a half? No, wow.
It was all right. But going through the middle of London at 4 a.m. was tremendous, honestly. Wow.
What was the problem? Was there a cancellation?
It was something called Lumo trains.
Oh, right.
They sort of look like they've been made out of Meccano sets.
And the cheap fare ones?
They were cheap, yeah. They were cheap and slow would be there. But they're all right. They got me there in the end.
Right, well, we're hoping not to be cheap or slow on The Ruck this morning. Coming up on the podcast, and sometimes at this time of year, it's a bit of a mishmash of things, isn't it? Because we jump between competitions, but we're off the men's Six Nations. Women's Six Nations kicked off, so we're going to talk to Rachel Burford, the former Red Roses centre, World Cup winner, about that, Sarah Hunter's valedictory exit from the game and all that. We're also going to talk about the state of the game in the men's side of it, at least in England, because we're doing a series in the paper at the moment that's looking at all sorts of different areas of the game and how they can be fixed. And the RPA's General Secretary, Christian Day, will join us to have a chat about all things that the players are after. We'll touch on a bit of the Premiership that happened over the weekend and look forward to the Champions Cup last 16 as that competition finally gets going. And also, as ever, we'll name our God or Goddess of the Week. But first, let's have a little look at the Prem and then into some Champions Cup. Right, Steve, you didn't do a Premiership game this weekend because you were up watching the Red Roses, but it felt like a bit of a moving weekend where London Irish have gone on this remarkable run. They were bottom at Christmas and now they're in fourth. Exeter lost to Bath and Rob Baxter was really annoyed about that and said he might basically change most of the team. They look like they're struggling now. You've got Quins who dropped out of it having lost to Saris at Tottenham. What piqued your interest when you weren't watching the women's stuff?
Well, obviously, obviously, as a Spurs fan, it was nice for the home team to play quite well for a start at Spurs. But I have to say, 55,000, you got to remember, Will, I'm slightly older than you. In fact, I'm slightly older than most people. And I used to cover games in front of 800 people.
Yeah.
Like at Roslyn Park, 1,000, Metropolitan Police, maybe 1,200. There are 55,000 there. That's absolutely unbelievable. And great tribute to the Saracens marketing department, but also to when the Premiership gets it right, it's still a great competition. But the other thing, obviously a great win for Saracens and dumps Quinns out of it, but what you say is right. There's this sort of soft middle core to the table with Gloucester, Quinns, London Irish, as you say.
Bristol, Northampton.
Yeah. On the day, anyone can beat someone else, which is great for the neutral, but you want your team to win every game.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, Northampton, for some of those teams to be in contention for fourth place indicates that the middle ground in the Premiership is not that strong. It really isn't. And you do feel that the final will be between the top two currently, Sale and Saracens.
Yeah, and also the fact that it's often the way, isn't it, especially when Saracens finish top of the table, you think the first one who finishes fourth, who nips in there, is on an absolute hiding to nothing. Like, they had their full team out, and Owen Farrell went off injured, but they looked seriously strong and favourites to take the title in May, probably, didn't they?
They do. Let's be fair, London Irish, let's not knock them at all, because they've come up magnificently. It's not the easiest existence to have been London Irish, because you don't actually have a sort of neighbourhood constituency, but they got this, what I think is a great place to play rugby in the end of the M4 there, and I think they've always been a great club. So good luck to them. I'm not saying I prefer them to get there than anybody else, but if they do, it'll be, I'm sure they'll acquit themselves really well. Saracens, in my opinion, are just quite substantially below what they were in the glory years with Will Skelton, but they fight like anything. And you could see when these guys come back from international rugby, there is no difference in the intensity with which they played for England than when they played for Saracens.
Just on a quick point on the sort of big game thing. So they called it the showdown, I think, Saracens and Quinns. And Harlequins have got another one of their sort of big summer ones coming against Bath in a couple of weeks in April. And it does seem like in the Premiership, the guys involved there are trying to put more of those sort of fixtures on. I think they're doing a body of work to look at which rivalries would really catch the audience, maybe a Bristol, Bath somewhere.
Yeah.
I suppose the difficulty for places around the country is finding a big stadium that's nearby, because it helps when you're in London. There's loads of them, aren't there? But do you think that would be a good idea to have more of those kind of marquee occasions on these weekends?
It's a great idea. I mean, the only trouble is with Bristol, Bath is that Bristol have got the biggest stadium in the area. But
unless you went to Cardiff or something like that, but then you kind of move out of the English bubble and all that, don't you?
You could do that. I mean, I think you've got to do that when you can. You'd think that Sale and possibly Newcastle or someone from the North Midlands, etc., could do something at,
St James's Park, Old Trafford, Anfield.
Yeah, exactly. They got all
Man
those.
City.
I think it has to be reasonably local, but it doesn't have to be on your doorstep. So, yeah, they're great. And look, Quinn started that, and good luck to them. And
Mark Evans started that, our friend.
Mark Evans started it, yes, he did. Let's hope they carry on. And Saracens have taken the march now with their idea. It's brilliant. And like I say, the Premiership, when it's good, it's really good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're not trying to completely brush over all the other teams, and if you haven't mentioned yours, then we apologise. But we're rattling through, because we've got loads to cover on this pod today. But I suppose the link to what's happening this weekend is it's the last 16 in the Champions Cup, and there are a fair few English teams in there. Obviously, there's more teams in general in this knockout. But we've always said, haven't we, that this is the real test of the quality of the Premiership, is how they match up against the big French teams, the big South African teams it is now, and the big Irish sides. We're looking at some of these fixtures, so that if you just particularly look at the English fixtures, actually could look quite positive in the quarterfinals the following week. So Leicester-Edinburgh on the Friday. You suspect that Leicester should probably get a result there. Then you've got Stormers-Harlequins, which looks like probably a tough trip for Quinns. And if they pulled that off in Cape Town, that'd be a remarkable result, probably. I mean, Stormers drew with Leinster on a reduced Leinster side on the weekend. And La Rochelle, Gloucester, you feel like that's only going one way, and probably quite heavily. Exeter, Montpellier, and then Saracens Osprey. So do you think you can, English teams can sneak in of three or four?
We were talking off air, Exeter, Montpellier. It's a tough game, but it really, a club like Exeter should bounce back, or it's a great opportunity for them to bounce back because they've not been playing well at all. And Rob Baxter had really sharp words for them on the weekend. So that is a season saver. If you could get through to the last eight of the Heineken, well then you'd not done badly. So that's a season saver. La Rochelle and Gloucester in La Rochelle. Gloucester not a great away team, but you have to be a great away team to win at La Rochelle. So some possibilities. If three got through, I think that would be absolutely brilliant. More like two.
The thing I think that happens after that, depending on results, is it possible La Rochelle Saracens quarterfinal, which that would be a real ding dong, wouldn't it?
It would be, and Saracens are one of the. I don't think Saracens are as great as they once were, but they are formidably difficult to beat. I mean, if La Rochelle and Saracens would be a magnificent game, La Rochelle are the champions, but you would never write off Saris in a game like that because they get, and a lot of people don't get this anymore, they get the sheer size and power of this tournament.
We always talk about this when the Champions Cup comes around, and without sounding like a broken record, it is a big issue about this tournament that it just takes so long to get going, doesn't it? And like these two weekends we're going to have now are going to be brilliant because they're going to be elite games with proper oppositions. You're going to have a last 16, it's straight knockout. Then the next week, straight into quarterfinals, which are all going to be fizzing. And I think they are looking at restructuring this competition again to make it a bit easier to follow because it just takes so long, doesn't it?
Well, you've almost forgotten if your team qualified or not after the pool stages. But it's got to remember, we said this on the Ruck before, Will, that there was a time definitely, absolutely definitely, where people were thinking this Heineken Cup is catching up with internationals in the Peel. People said, I love following England, but now I'm going to follow Northampton to Biarritz or wherever it may be. It is not remotely as big in the hearts and minds of followers or the media as it once was. And as you say, we've got to get that back. And that the key to that is the opening stages. I hear they may be going back to pools, which I think they should. Mm. It's not COVID anymore. But you've got to get that bite back, that awful task of going away to Saracens or Leicester or Munster, and we've got to get it back, and we've got to make it pay, because I mean, remember Nigel Ray of Saracens telling me what they actually won for consecutive trophy wins in the tournament. It was tuppence halfpenny. It was nothing, absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So you've got to make it attractive financially as well. So let's hope it kicks itself in the backside.
Yeah, as you say, I think there are moves there's lots of restructuring in rugby, which we'll get onto in our final section today about the whole state of the game. But they're definitely looking at streamlining the Champions Cup, I think, which would help. My theory has always been that I feel like they should have a tournament of 16. So you have five from the three leagues plus the winner of the Challenge Cup from the season before.
Mm.
And it's a nice, easy number, four into four pools, and go from there. Right, so should we be putting our necks on the line? And should we try and rattle through? Who do we think's going to win out of all these? There's eight games.
Yes.
Leicester, Edinburgh?
Very tight, tighter than people think. I'm going to go for Edinburgh.
Okay, I think I'll go the other way. Home advantage, Leicester. Sharks, Munster. Sharks for a bit of home advantage and all the box playing.
Yeah.
They seem like they're really targeting it this year.
They're really targeting it, and Munster not a good away side.
Okay, easy. Stormers, Quins. I'm going to go Stormers, Cape Town, 25 degrees.
Yes.
Probably a basketball score, but yeah. Stormers to win.
Yeah, definitely. And for Quins to have to prick themselves off the floor from yesterday and go out there in the middle of the season, that's a tough one. Stormers definitely.
So Quins actually flew out on Monday morning, this morning, and they're probably going to have a few days of recovery, but I think they went business class, so they're doing all right.
Oh, and second thoughts, I fancy Quins for that one then, business class.
Yeah, they've had two trips there this season. They had Sharks early in the season there. I think they were pretty disappointed they lost that. It was quite close, but yeah, Stormers are a pretty decent side, so go for them. Leinster, Ulster seems inevitable. Ulster had a few seasons before where they looked really coming, didn't they?
Yeah, they always get so far, then they can't make the next
step. But then
step.
Poor them, they'd bloody go and draw Leinster. That's tough, isn't it?
Leinster are too good. It's all set up for them to win because every game is home, including the finals. So what more could you want?
Yeah. And then we touched on La Rochelle Gloucester before. I mean, Gloucester can surprise us, but that would be one of the great victories if they were to go to the Atlantic coast and win there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right, so Exeter Montpellier, quite a tough one. Montpellier have always been a weird team to judge because they have one bomb-out result every year.
Yeah.
But then they come into the knockouts and they took Quinn's scalp last year, didn't they? They're clearly a good team. Well, we used they're a to bit say, random, aren't they?
We used to say, you never know with the French. Well, that doesn't apply to a lot of French teams anymore, but you never know with Montpellier. Exeter, if there's anything of the old Exeter spirit left, that could be a cracking game.
I'm going to back Montpellier. There you go.
I'll go Exeter then.
Sarri's Ospreys. Ospreys did really well to get through, didn't they? And took a couple of marquee results, but yes. Sarri's a step too far, probably.
Probably. Farrell didn't look like he'd be fit. And to back up a huge game like that is difficult. Great chance for Ospreys, though. Great chance. Yeah. I mean, come on, boys. Let's see what you can do.
Absolutely.
But Saracens for me.
And then last one, Toulouse Bulls. Probably home advantage there, isn't it?
That'll be difficult. I don't think Bulls are that great, and Toulouse are on their day great. So Toulouse by 15 points.
There you go. Rattled through. So that was Prem. That was the Champions Cup. There's also a round of Challenge Cup coming as well, but we haven't got loads more time to talk about that this week, but we'll try and touch on it next week because after that, it's the quarterfinals in both competitions. But up next on the Ruck, we need to look back at the Women's Six Nations weekend that just happened. So we'll have Rachel Burford on, former England centre, after this. So the weekend just gone was the start of the Women's Six Nations, the TikTok Women's Six Nations. And joining us now is former Red Rose England World Cup winner, Rachel Burford. Rachel, how are you going?
I'm going really well, thank you. Great weekend. Finally, it's kicked off. We've all been waiting for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was a remarkable occasion, wasn't it, up in Kingston Park. Steve, you were there. Sarah Hunter's valedictory exit from the game.
I didn't notice that.
was it just like an amazing occasion to celebrate one of the greats?
Yeah, it was. It was a dream occasion. And they did go out of their way to make it significant for Sarah, which is, I'm sure she had mixed thoughts about that because she's not a person who's dashes to claim the limelight. But let's just talk about the Sarah bit, the goodbye Sarah for a start. The atmosphere there was unbelievable. I mean, the ground was packed and we had to walk around the ground beforehand and it was absolutely steaming. And the love and affection for Sarah as a local was one thing, but the support and the kind of aged what they call it, the kind of general age of the crowd, etc., was really low. There were loads and loads, thousands of youngsters there. You would hope are just actually starting to play a game for the last couple of years. It was just perfect. Sarah was was just Sarah. She was looked quite diffident, and at one stage during the anthem, she was so worried that the little mascot in front of it was getting cold, she was sort of rubbing the mascot's head, the arms, legs and everything, and I thought that was Sarah as well, but
That was her niece.
Oh, was it?
Wow. Yeah, right. It was her niece. Yeah.
Oh, lovely. That, I didn't know that, but I wish I had. But anyway, her niece clearly enjoyed it when she put her tracksuit on and got warm. But it was wonderful. England were tremendous. Scotland, I think, played a lot better than the score suggests. I think Scotland will give teams trouble this year because they were organised, they were fit, they were still going at the end. They've only been pro, Will, for a matter of minutes in the TikTok of it all. But all in all, just a great day in Newcastle.
Yeah. Rachel, before we get onto the game, just some words on Sarah. You would have played loads with her. Do you remember the first time you met her? I saw some... something that England Rugby put out of her was some dodgy haircuts at some point. She had cornrows, I think, at one point. Do you remember that? Those
yeah,
days?
I was the one who did those cornrows.
Did you? Yeah.
Plaits, yeah. Katie Daly McLean used to come and demand like 15 plaits in her hair, and I'd be like, right, okay, you're my 10, so I probably should do as I'm told. I think early days, just not much different to what you see now, just super smiley, super happy to be around people, makes time for everybody and is just a real grafter. That's a testament to why she is where she is, and to earn 141 caps doesn't come through chance or just talent alone. And, you know, for every single cap, she earned her right and worked so hard. And that's been since day dot, since she got that chance to play in a Six Nations. It was an opening game. How fitting, actually. I just realised that her opening game was against Scotland.
Perfect.
In 2007. Yeah. And then her finishing game was against Scotland on her home ground. Yeah, she's just always been such a good person to be around, and then has grown into being, you know, the wonderful leader that she is. And I love the fact that, you know, she got the opportunity to finish the way she wanted to. And, you know, the RFU and the coaching staff allowed for all of this to happen all week. And you're right, Jonesy, she certainly wouldn't have welcomed any of it. She kind of wanted to get it out there early and then focus in on the game, and that's all it would have been about for her, just actually putting on a good performance for England first and foremost, and then now putting her feet up and enjoying it from the sidelines.
Yeah, she said she's going to try and stay involved at Loughborough Lightning. And how important is that, that you keep the IQ in the room, I suppose? She's experienced so much of women's rugby and the highs and lows of it that it's important to keep those voices in there, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, she hasn't openly said this, but, you know, I would suspect, you know, she's got aspirations to be part of the England coaching setup. You know, so many players kind of have a coaching role at when they're at that level in international teams. You know, they're part of the coaching team already. You know, they help with the strategy around the game plan. They help with running the sessions and making sure players are developing and growing. So I think she wants to, you know, go full time and really be able to focus on coaching solely. And then, yeah, who knows where we might see her involved on an international status come 2025 or even before.
Rachel, just going to the game itself in a second, but it's a very interesting point there because, I mean, I've written in the paper, so I'm not actually revealing this, but I was very surprised that they didn't bring in the new coach as soon as the World Cup was over. But that's one of their machinations, I suppose. But I would love personally to see that a new coach is a woman, not only because of the message it sends out, but because there are some absolutely wonderful, powerful, aggressive and talented women coaches around. I mean, I know you speak, it'll be your personal opinion, but what do you think, it's time now?
I definitely think females should be involved, whether that's the head coach or part of the wider coaching group. There has to be a female staff member in there. And we, like you said, there's definitely plenty of talent that are involved in the game right now that could step into those shoes and do it. I think from a playing point of view, you just want the best person. And I think whether that's male or female, you just want somebody who's going to be able to develop that environment to be a really positive, dynamic, challenging environment, and ultimately challenge you to be a better player. That's all that players care about. But I think the fact that we have talent that is ready and available and is good enough to step into that environment, I don't see why there can't be and shouldn't be a female staff member who's part of the coaching team full time in that environment. I think I've just said, there's plenty of talent that are either on the cusp or currently already involved in the game at those kind of levels from a women's perspective. And I think I'm really fascinated to see what direction England take, and do they take the tact of, actually, we're going to have somebody who's maybe more experienced in running of a program at an international level, and we're going to bring a female staff member, and we're going to work on our succession plan, and we're going to make sure that they're ready to then take over in 2025 or before then. But yeah, it was an interesting move, wasn't it, with the RFU opting to keep the coaching staff for this Six Nations, because, you know, that's five games that the new coach won't get or to be involved in. So it's an interesting move, but you just feel that probably on the back of the World Cup, everybody comes home, things settle, and then suddenly you're trying to find a new coach that's got to start in, you know, a couple of months.
I do agree with you, but that happens at almost every World Cup, men's World Cup, in almost every team. I think that if the new person had come in now, they could have spent a season looking at the Premier 15s and sifting. Yeah. There's so much talent out there that suddenly at the end of this Six Nations, someone's going to be saying, right, off you go, you're the coach. We've wasted this Six Nations, and you could have been in charge. But I don't want to be too controversial. Let me just also say this, Rachel, that you summarised the tournament beautifully for us. But you know, the pain of losing the final was awful. But when I see this England team now, the pain actually gets worse for me because they are so good. And they are so talented. And in my heart, with respect to the Black Ferns, I think they should categorically have won the tournament. But now you're almost sort of marking time for another 3 years. Is that how you feel, or are you at peace with it now?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard, especially the way that England played this weekend. It kind of really showed all of their cards. And, you know, the group will just be focusing on what's next now. They won't want to look back. They've kind of digested it. And I think they took so much from the way that they handled that defeat. And I think that says so much about them as a group, and what that can galvanise them into doing in the future is a pretty daunting prospect, I think, for everybody else watching him.
So, Rachel, in this tournament then, what do you think England can learn, or what should they want to learn over the next few weeks about the team and how they can play the game? Because they're clearly one of the best teams in the world. That's probably not going to change. But how can they get to that next level, do you think?
Well, I think when you reflect and look back at how the Black Ferns played, they just went out and expressed themselves with complete freedom and enjoyed it. And they believed in what they were going to do. Some decisions you'd be like, no, don't do, you know, think of that penalty in that World Cup final. She doesn't kick for touch. And then suddenly they get a turnover, and that gives England an opportunity back. But I think that's what we want to see from England, is that real freedom to express and play that the way that we know that they're capable of doing. And that being their instinct, not, right, we'll just pin a team in a corner and we'll use our driving line out because we know that works. I think that's the kind of growth that you want to see over this Six Nations, but not just against kind of teams they're really familiar in, but taking that into the WXV later this year as well, I think is a really big growing area for them, because they want to be multiple threats across the whole team. And if they can grow and believe in themselves and just have that freedom, which we saw them play on Saturday with, when it comes to those big crunch games, and actually play that style against the France and against the New Zealand, then I think, you know, that says a lot about the team and their growth.
Rachel, Mally Packer won't be very happy with you. She, when you're talking about driving lineups, they drove three lineups in about 3 minutes, and she scored every one. So maybe she didn't think it was too bad. Listen, just before we move on to the other teams, I'm going to give you three names, and I thought about them all on Saturday. Wow. One was Sadia Kbeya in the back row. Yeah. Another was Claudia McDonald on the wing, who was, after injury, was sensational. And also Lagi Tuima in the centre. I thought, blimey, she is really a coming force in the game. Have I picked out the good three there?
Yeah, you have. I mean, I definitely had Kbeya and Claudia, and I also had Poppy Kleel. I thought she was really busy, did a lot of unseen work. But yeah, for Lagi Tuima, you know, she missed out on the Rugby World Cup, and she was struggling with a bit of form last year, but she's been performing so well in the Premier 15s. And that's just given her that confidence back to play freely. And I think she played really well. She did all the right things, passed at the right time, carried at the right time, in the right position, worked hard, stepped up to do kicking duties. You know, when you're playing 13, everybody knows, obviously, Emily Scarrett is who she is, right? And so without having that kind of on your shoulders and knowing that she's got an opportunity to just take this Six Nations and make it her own and really kind of step into that role, I just think she's reveling in that opportunity. And also missing out on the World Cup, you know, really hurt her, like it would any player. And I think she's just seen it as, now, right, I'm back in the fold. I'm going to maximise every bit I can. And I thought she started the campaign so, so well.
It's always a big question mark as to whether some of the games are too easy and we're desperate to see the other teams rise. Now, Wales really put Ireland away and looked good, looked to have a good scrummage there. Also, Italy were not hammered by France. And Will was just saying that if Italy had a kicking game, it might have been very, very close. Those two games, is that evidence for you that things are evening up just a little bit?
Yeah, I think we've all got to be aware that just because you suddenly start getting paid to play, that you're going to have this transformation in your performance. It takes time. And I think Wales are actually a really good showcase of that. You know, last year they were in the Six Nations, you know, for big periods of games, but that fitness level, that cohesion together, knowing each other, didn't really show. And I think that game against Ireland at the weekend, they look really fit. They look organised. They looked really direct. They've got a couple of key players that are missing, but you wouldn't have thought that having watched how they played at the weekend. And that's because they've had another year together. They've had another year to work things out, to work with Yoren Cunningham, to shape the game that they want to play. And mm-hmm. I think that's the marking of how professionalism isn't just about now suddenly they're played, that means we're going to get performance. It's all the other elements that come with it, and that takes time to build. And Ireland very much in that infancy of that. And, you know, I'm sure everybody's aware, not all of those players are living in Ireland on a full-time contract in a full-time daily training environment. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are spread out, staying in England, playing at their clubs. So there's still a lot of time there. And I think for Italy, we've always seen them slowly coming on that rise. And you just hope that potentially more time together, they're going to be able to edge out those tight wins and take on those top teams. And we saw some, they were one of the most exciting teams to watch at the World Cup, mm-hmm. the way that they played and their progression. And, you know, they've got a new coaching set up now. So it'd be interesting to see the direction that they take during this Six Nations.
Quick last thought then, Rachel, before we let you go. Next weekend, we've got Ireland, France, Scotland, Wales and England, Italy. Three names from you there. Who's going to win those three? Scotland, Wales is probably the trickiest one to judge of those, is it?
It is, but I'm back in Wales on that. I think France are going to beat Ireland fairly comfortably, and England are going to beat Italy.
There you go. Perfect. Well, really appreciate your time this morning, Rachel, and all the best for the next week or so. And let's hope we see some fantastic games next weekend in the Women's Six Nations.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, so next on The Ruck, we're joined by Christian Day, the General Secretary of the Rugby Players Association. Christian, how are you? Where in the world are you?
I'm actually at Leicester Tigers Day. I'm doing okay. I'm nervous about being put on the rack. That sounds ominous, but but no, it's a start of a busy week for me, but good to be able to speak.
Yeah, on the rack, on the ruck. This is the way we're doing things.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly.
In the Times this week, we're doing a bit of a series about the state of the union and where we're at in English rugby after the Six Nations. Not so much totally focusing on the men's national team, but the pathways and the players and the club game and everything else. And that's why we wanted you to come on, because you've been in the room negotiating with the RFU and the clubs about the new professional game agreement, which, for people that don't know, that's the kind of agreement which enshrines the financial and structural relationship between club and country. It's currently being negotiated to come in for 2024. So what's the discussion centering on, Christian, and what, in your role, are you really pushing for the next deal?
Yeah, so I guess, look, the professional game agreement, or the PGA, as most people know it, it's kind of the rule book for the professional game. And it was always previously about England players, England player release and you know, money transfer, essentially. But that was 8 years ago. We're really trying to push, and, you know, I'm new to this role at the RPA, but I'm really, really passionate about trying to reposition the players a little bit. So we're trying to push that, look, the PGA needs to evolve. In our eyes, it should be like an enhanced agreement, encompasses a lot of other factors that a professional sport needs to think about. And for us, like I said, for myself, I'm really passionate. I want the players to be seen as a really important part of this, as partners in the game. So no longer just as employees. A partnership brings a lot of positives to the situation in terms of a collective strength of all three stakeholders. It lets everyone know where they stand. It lets everyone know how we can work together. And if you look around the world at so many different professional sports, that's how they operate. And that's my pitch, that rugby union should do the same.
In terms of the devil's going to be in the detail of all this, are there a couple of things that you're really looking at this time and saying, like, they're the non-negotiables for us? I mean, I know you're supportive of a minimum wage as one thing. Is that top of the agenda on your ideas?
Well, so this is the complexities of it. So minimum wage is probably going to be a competitions issue. So straight away, we're talking about the Premiership. And actually, we're probably talking about the Premiership salary cap. So 18 months' time is a bit of a turning point for the game, really. And it really is an opportunity to restart things after what's been a really tough period. So at that time, you've got the PGA finishes, you've got the salary caps up for renegotiation or like a reset. The Premiership standard contract is being reviewed as we speak. So there's lots and lots of different things all happening at the same time. And I guess our point of view is that they should all almost be looked at together. You can't really do any of them in isolation because they all affect each other. But certainly you've hit on something that we're really quite passionate about, is that, and actually this has come from the players themselves. So we've actually surveyed the players on this and said, which are the important things, particularly relating to the salary cap. And they've highlighted a few really. So one is, they want to be competitive in Europe, you know, against the giants, particularly of France and Ireland. And there's a feeling at the moment that the cap's restrictive in that regard. But then in terms of these protections, there's two that really stand out for me. One is a minimum wage and one is a professional players benevolent fund. So we're protecting those guys at the start of their career primarily. And those guys who come to the end and they fall out of it with issues or hardship. And we should have a fund set up that looks after those players a little bit better.
So on the minimum wage, do you have an idea of what level that should be at? And what would be a sort of the bottom level of wages for guys now, so if our listeners can understand what the change could be?
Yeah, so look, our pitch here is that we want an inclusive sport. We want a sport that everyone can play. So we don't want players, particularly these academy players who are kind of 18 to all the way up to 23 years old. So when we talk about academy, it can be quite senior guys. And we think they should be paid a wage that's fair, given the sacrifices they make, but also that they can live on. So straight away, we're talking about the living wage. And putting an hourly rate on a professional athlete's work doesn't reflect fairly on the hours that they sacrifice. So for us, it should be something that the league sets, that everyone's happy with. And if anything, it just gives real stability to everyone and lets everyone know what the level is. And then we can get on with trying to produce excellent rugby players.
Just on that note of that, one of the bigger arguments that's going to come up in this 2024 new professional game agreement is the whole RFU's foreign policy. At the moment, if you play abroad, you can't play for England. There are exceptional circumstances at the moment. Where do you stand on that, Christian? I know lots of the players would want to say, look, if my value is higher abroad and I'm not being offered what I can be elsewhere, then why should I sacrifice my England career? We heard last week from a couple of Premiership DORs who are absolutely dead against it. Rob Baxter, Mark McCall were two of those that spoke out. It seems like Premiership Rugby wants to stick by it, and the RFU. Where do you sit with all that? Because it's a hell of a thing to negotiate that, isn't it?
I think it's in the current climate, I think it's about trying to make a case that it is an exceptional circumstance. So for someone like Jack, you know, Wasps went bust and he had no option. You know, there was no viable option on the table for him to remain in England, and he chose to go to France, and fully supportive of that. And likewise, if there are players this year with the cap suppressed, I think we need to look at that with an open mind and say, look, in the short term, if they can't get a fair value in England, you know, we can make a short-term exceptional circumstance why they should be allowed to go abroad and still play. For me, as someone who's passionate about English rugby, whose job is to make English rugby as good as it can be for the players, in the long term, I want to see England players playing in the Premiership. They're going to make the club competition stronger and ultimately the international team stronger, because it guarantees that release for your fourth international in the autumn. It guarantees release for training weekends. And ultimately, those are all important to make a strong England. So long term, I definitely think we want English players playing in the Premiership. But in the short term, you know, we need to make exceptions if they're needed.
Should we be worried about that? Our readers will see lots of stories this season of plenty of Exeter players leaving for France, and Anthony Watson having a look around. Castor was the other one the other day, and Joe Marchant, David Ribbons, they're both going to the top 14. Jack Willis, as we've mentioned, in different circumstances. Is that enough to be a worrying trend, do you think?
I think it just highlights that at the moment the Premiership is going through financial uncertainty, financial difficulties. And if the salary cap is reduced, it's going to make going abroad much more attractive to players who can maybe command a higher wage there. So that's the realities of a professional sport. And that's why the salary cap does need to be something that is reasonable. And we will always say a fair deal for the players. And a fair deal for the players encompasses at the bottom a minimum wage. But again, we've got to make sure it's a fair deal for those players at the top of their game. And you can't almost handcuff them to the league if they're not going to get a fair deal there. So I know next year the cap's going to reduce, but then after that it goes up. And one thing that we've said to our members is we want to know what the mechanism is for the cap. You know, why does the cap go down? Why does the cap go up? And primarily, we think it needs to be linked to the revenues of the league. And pre-COVID, those revenues were growing really well. COVID's really, really affected the sport. We know that. And we know still there's uncertainty. But as the finances recover and grow, we just expect that cap to grow in line and make sure that the players are fairly rewarded for what is a really tough career at the end of the day, where the money isn't anywhere near what it is in football or some other glamorous sports. I don't want to say a difficult life because it's not difficult, but it is a tough sport.
Yeah.
And we just want to see a fair reflection of that.
The one thing that always comes up in these negotiations too, and will rear its head again this time, is the big unwieldy word of central contracts. The player, again, more senior England players are going to be in the Times today backing it as a positive step forward. Is that viable, do you think? And actually, it was interesting the other day that Mark McCall, who you would have thought previously would be dead against it, was hugely supportive of central contracts and essentially the RFU taking some of the wages off the Premiership books. Do you think that would be something that could work for English rugby like it does in other countries?
I absolutely think it can work. I don't think it's something that's been hugely discussed by the RFU as yet, and it's their, it's their thing to put forward if it's something they think will work. Ultimately, we probably need a long-term goal for the Premiership and English rugby and how it's going to look in 5-10 years' time. We can look at Ireland, who at the moment are really successful, but I think Ireland give out 12 central contracts, so it's not like the whole England EPS squad are going to be centrally contracted. It's a much smaller thing if we're going to look at Ireland. But then we look at France, who are really successful at the moment. They don't have any central contracts. They have, but what they have at the moment apparently is much better relations between the clubs and the union than previous. So to me, again, we've said there's a big opportunity here to rethink how we do things, but it's important that we have a longer strategy than just this year. We shouldn't just say Ireland have done well this year, let's do what they do. We need a long-term strategy. And I'll go back to what I said at the start. The players need to be fully engaged with this. You can't just put a system out and say, right, now we're doing this, get on with it. If the players are speaking out, let's listen to what the players think. And I know from my interactions with the EPS squad, there's always been questions of their management, how many minutes they play, how many games they play. That would probably be a big step forward under central contracting. But ultimately, at the other end, the England team have always been well rewarded for playing for England. And ultimately, to get more control, the RFU are probably going to have to pay a bit more money to the clubs. And again, that's going to change that dynamic.
Is there some part of it, like thinking on the other side of it, where if the finances of all these clubs is clearly been savaged over the last few years and the RFU have not got as much money, does there have to be some sort of acceptance from the players? And there probably has been, that they can't earn as much as they used to. And I know some will have already had that acceptance of that, but is that part of this too, that the days of earning huge wages were probably gone for a while?
I think we've already seen that happen, Will, and actually we saw some pretty incredible leadership from the players through COVID, took pay cuts to try and help the clubs. That's not something that was refused. So wages have in the short term suffered. I think that's a fact, and we're in a salary cap league. So of course it has been a fact, but I'll go back to what I said. As the revenues recover, as the game starts to grow again, which ultimately I do think it will, we need a fair system that will tell the players what their earning potential will be in future. And I would also say at the top of the game, I don't think the earning potential has been hugely impacted. I would say more it's those middle earners, the type of player that I was, being perfectly honest, that you're kind of club pro. They're the ones who've probably been squeezed out more. And actually the younger players are becoming more important. And your England players will always be important and sought after. That's, that comes with the territory of being one of the best players in the world.
We hear lots of reports about a couple of wobbly clubs and still worries about finances. Are you still concerned a bit, Christian, that we're not out of the woods yet with all this?
No, I don't think we are out of the woods. I think we're doing a lot of good work. I think Simon Massey-Taylor's come in at Premiership Rugby and he really has changed things and he's trying to improve things and develop things. I do think that there are still financial issues existing, but that's, rugby's never been fully insulated from that kind of thing. So there's hard work still to be done. And with that comes some responsibility, I think. You can't just say we're going to match the playing budgets of Leinster or Toulouse straight away. But the crucial thing is that we have the ambition. English rugby teams have always been competitive in Europe. And like I said, at the moment, the players don't feel that that's possible, but we need to show them the ambition and the growth. And who's to say this year we won't have a surprise? I mean, that Saracens team at the weekend was pretty impressive, and Leicester seemed to be getting a run of steam going. But still, you know, the players want to know that it's a level playing field, and that will come. I'm hopeful that will come, but we probably need to just be get a bit of stability in the short term.
Yeah, and just a last thought, and maybe that's it's a general point, is are you hopeful this time that this will be a proper full partnership between the players, the RFU and PRL, that it's not something that's just foisted on the players, that this is a kind of triumvirate that's all three equal partners now?
I'm confident that I've got some meetings in my diary, so I'm confident we're going to go to those. I'm confident that I'm going to be well prepared, and ultimately that you know the hard work is very much not done. So it's about being, as I said, you know, well prepared and trying to make sure that you put forward what the players want. We can't please everyone, you know, we can't please every single player in the game with what ends up. But you know, I have a real desire here to try and protect some players a little bit better, make the system a little bit fairer, but ultimately be really ambitious. We want England to be one of the best teams in the world. We want English teams winning European Cups. So we've got to show how that growth is going to come. I think the product on the pitch is pretty exciting. You know, we're getting a lot of exciting games, but we've got to make sure the quality's there. And that's probably where that pathway question comes in as well. So look, there's loads of work to be done, but what we can say is, at a time of change, the opportunity should exist. It's not like we're locked into things that can't be changed. So it's about trying to look, like I said, with a bit of a goal towards the future and how we're going to get there.
Yeah. Well, look, really appreciate your time this morning, Christian, and all the best with it. I think plenty of professionals around the country will be hoping that you can come up with a better deal this time. So all power to what you're doing, and thanks for coming on The Ruck.
Thank you, Will. Good speaking.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Great to hear from Christian Day there. And just to mark your cards, listeners and readers of The Times, which I know you all are, the State of the Game series that we're doing at the moment over a few days is still coming along. Sam Warburton kicked it off for us by talking about the changes that Steve Borthwick and the England coaches could make to make them a force come the World Cup. On Monday, today, recording, I did a piece about how we got to this position in a club game and the ways that the Premiership Rugby and others are trying to solve the issues. Alex Lowe's coming Monday for Tuesday, talking about the players, central contracts, the foreign rule. And then we've got also a piece from John Westerby coming about trying to repair the pathway that conveyor belt that looks to have stopped, basically. Mm. On a couple of big issues, Steve, where do you sit? The one that was fascinating last week was Mark McCall coming out and being really positive for central contracting, which was a few years ago, you'd never have thought that the Saracens DOR would have said that, but he did.
He did say that, and I think he was really, really positive about the idea of not losing all his players.
Yeah,
I think
that's and not what, having that's to pay them all their wages.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it is ridiculous because I don't know if people realise that Farrell plays an average of about one game in three. Still gets his full salary and good luck to him. But the RFU don't offload any of that from the clubs. And also, when an England player goes away, the compensation package is absolutely minuscule. It's pathetic. And say Farrell's away, because they've got this grounding up procedure at the Premiership, everyone stays level. If Farrell goes away with England, the compensation goes some to Sarries and some goes in the central pool. It's absolutely crackers.
Yeah.
So it was. I don't know whether the Saracens owners came in with effusive congratulations to Mark for that, but it was something. And if it means that fans get to see their players more often, maybe there is something in it. But we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, it just feels like they're negotiating this professional game agreement, as we spoke about with Christian, that this is a massive moment for English rugby, isn't it? That if they don't solve so many of these issues in one go this time, then they're just kicking the can down the road for more problems.
Well, what you were hinting at this morning in the paper was not so much, oh, it's coming up, but don't just say, right, we've given you an extra 4% on last year's, let's sign another deal. It's got to be radically different. This is the big chance. Everybody now is going radical. Even the Welsh Rugby Union, which we'll come to in a minute, has gone radical for the first time in 175 years. So the game is changing rapidly, and this new deal between the club and country, first of all, this money that is given over by Twickenham, it is not a handout. It is money that the clubs have earned, and is theirs by divine right for developing players for England and for losing them to England. It is not a charitable handout.
Yeah. And just to cover off the other thing that's the hot button issue of the moment is this potential relaxation of the foreign policy, which essentially I don't think is going to change. I mean, Rob Baxter and Mark McCall were very negative about that changing, and I was chatting to a few people for that piece I wrote and in the club game, and they said no way, absolute disaster. But then you've got the players who are supportive of it, and Anthony Watson was looking around Castro last week, and there's a different situation with people like Jack Willis, and I know that the RFU will look at his particular situation to see whether there are still exceptional circumstances if he stays in Toulouse. But that looks like a really big argument that's going to be fought soon.
Huge argument. I mean, in Wales they've lost the argument because there's no way you can demand that players stay in the Welsh club game because it's not good enough at the moment. In England it's just about good enough, even though the wages have gone down. So unbelievably ticklish argument. And if Jack Willison starts a bit of a snowball, say 10 want to go, then they are struggling. So we'll see.
Right, Steve, just before we get on to the God, Goddess or Devil of the Week ending to the pod, one of the bigger results of the weekend actually happened in a hotel in Port Talbot, didn't it? Can you talk us through that, the WRU's vote?
It was an extraordinary general meeting. And every club or every voting member of the Welsh Rugby Union had a vote. And for years, the old guard, the Blazer Brigade, have been, the tail's been wagging the dog in terms of refusing to let the game get a proper professional arm with dynamic leadership, and in its place became sexual allegations, misogyny, etc., etc. Now, the last time, about a year ago, they had the same sort of vote, and they only just got through the Welsh Rugby Union, but not enough to carry the motion. They wanted 75%. This time, there was a total avalanche, 245 in favour of the WRU motion, that is, in favour of changing the game, and 7 against. Now, that is an absolutely staggering result. It is like someone who lost 100-0 last week winning 100-0 this week. What it does mean is the Welsh Rugby Union board would no longer be a bunch of people who are only there because they've worn their blazers for 30, 40 years. So that was an absolutely tremendous vote. Puts the WRU ahead of the RFU in terms of structure, but they got a long way to go, but this was a decent start.
Yeah, perfect. Well done to them. And let's now look at our God or Goddess of the Week. Where are you going for yours, Steve? I'm going for the obvious choice, perhaps?
The obvious choice doesn't mean he or she's not the God or Goddess of the Week, are they? Usually we try and come up with someone who's a little bit left field and everything, but Sarah Hunter, I'm afraid, if I don't make her the Goddess of the Week, I can never go to Newcastle again for a start. Never look Sarah in the eye again, which, as she's won the Rugby Union Writers Club Personality of the Year, it'd be very difficult to miss her. Sarah Hunter, by a street, is my Goddess of the Week.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, what a warrior and hell of a career, and nice way to finish it off in your home ground as
Absolutely.
Well, isn't it? Yeah, great choice. I mean, yours is probably the one for this week, but I think my mention will go to, let's say, Les Kiss and Declan Kidney at London Irish. dragging them up from the bottom at Christmas. I know it's a mad league, but fourth in the table, another good result. They're getting decent crowds there, and I know not all is completely rosy off the field at London Irish, so doing that despite everything is a hell of an effort. And if they can keep going in the last two or three games of the season and get into that playoff picture, then that's absolutely remarkable. So they can be my gods of the week, but definitely the goddess of quite a lot of weeks, to be honest, is Sarah Hunter. So great shout, Steve. Right, everyone, that has been a packed ruck for your Monday, or wherever you download and listen to this. Next, we'll be back in a week's time to talk about the Champions Cup. We'll look back at the last 16, as was, and then whatever the quarterfinal shake-up is. But for now, that has been the ruck. Thanks for downloading, listening, subscribing. Tell all your friends about it, and see us all next time. But for now, goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.